Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm very happy to have you aboard this week as we continue with part two of my chat with award-winning choreographer Tina Landon. Tina has worked with A-list music stars like Michael and Janet Jackson, Ricky Martin, Shakira, Christina Aguilera, and has most recently spent several years working with Rihanna. In part two of our chat, Tina talks about her burgeoning acting career, as well as what it was like to perform with Janet Jackson at the 2009 MTV Video Music Awards, honoring her brother Michael. We also have a chat about breast cancer prevention and a killer remix from Rihanna.
Capture your need for sound.
Coming up in just a few moments, you're going to hear part two of my interview with award-winning choreographer Tina Landon. But before we get there, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to all the Janet Zone fans who have come over and logged on to the website to take a listen to part one. I've been getting lots of messages and words of support regarding the interview. Many people telling me it's an awesome interview, the best one that they've heard Tina give in a long time. So I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me, especially the nice comments where people tell me that I'm asking the right questions. So I appreciate that very much. And on behalf, I think, of all of the Janet Zone fans and Janet Jackson fans and Tina Landon fans around the world, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that their partnership really was magical. During the 90s, the work that they did together and created together was just fantastic. And I think we were all so lucky to witness what they did together. They really were like superheroes together. And I really think that Tina did change the way that things were done and really raised the bar for other choreographers to step up to the plate. So it's just been wonderful to have Tina on the show. And again, I really appreciate all of your words of support and the emails that have come in. It really means a lot to me, and I cannot wait for you to hear part two of the interview. But before we get there, I just wanted to take a moment as we do sort of march through the month of October. As you know, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month around the world, and I just wanted to sort of make mention that even though, you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, it's very important that you take care of your breast health all year long. All the ladies and even all the men, there is a significant amount of men that do get afflicted with this awful disease, and it's something that can be dealt with very well if you do, you know, get your proper screenings and do your self breast exams. It's something that you can sort of get a handle on very quickly. And it's 1 in 8 women that will come down with breast cancer. So it's not catastrophic, I guess, but it's still a high percentage of women that are going to get afflicted with this disease. And if you are a longtime listener of the show, you know that my own mom, Mummy Alexander, was afflicted with breast cancer in 2009, and unfortunately she did end up having to have a mastectomy, but the good news is that she's still with us here today, and she's in great spirits and doing very well. But as you can imagine, breast cancer awareness is very important to me, and I just want to make sure that all of my listeners are really sort of taking care of themselves. And I'm fortunate to actually work at a radio station here in Montreal, Virgin Radio 96, that does an initiative every year where we raise money for the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation. And to date, we've raised over $3.7 million, I believe it is, for the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation. And what happens is we call it Shave to Save. And we actually go out to usually businesses around the city, sometimes to high schools. And it's people that raise money. They have to raise $2,000. And then we show up with a stylist from an awesome salon downtown called Le Coupe. And they actually shave your head. And it's these people going around raising the money to get their head shaved, and it all goes to a good cause, the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation. And some people are actually even more courageous in the fact that they grow their hair long enough to either donate it to Locks of Love or to some other organization that will make wigs for cancer patients. And I've been involved in this for, I guess it's 4 years now, as long as I've worked at the station, and it really makes me feel great that I get to go out into the community and meet people, these courageous people who want to raise money to help the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation. And sometimes it's people that don't even, you know, feel super connected to the cause, like they don't actually have a family member, but they just feel that breast cancer is such an awful disease and something that can be can be dealt with that they want to help raise money. And sometimes it's actually people who are very affected by the disease. They've lost a mom or they've had an aunt that's had it, so they really want to get involved. And one of the cases that we had this year was an awesome lady who was raising money for her sister who actually lives in Alberta, which is out west, so several provinces away from Quebec. And the sister right now, Heather, is going through breast cancer. And so her sister wanted to raise the money and try to help help the cause. So I really feel touched by stories like this, people wanting to help, again, people who are afflicted by this disease, and to actually get programs in place to help people be very self-aware of the disease. So I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone that's involved, obviously here in my hometown in Montreal, that have been trying to help out the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation. But obviously around the world, there are organizations that you too can help out. And again, the main thing to remember, whether you're a man or a woman, is to be aware that this is a disease that can happen, but it's definitely something that can be dealt with. But please make sure you are taking those steps. Ladies, you need to make sure you're having those mammograms. But even above that, because sometimes mammograms don't pick up everything. So make sure that you are doing your self-breast exams. It's very important. So thank you so much for sort of listening to this. I just wanted to make mention of it because it is a very important cause in my life and for so many women out there, and again, even men that are affected by this awful disease. So thank you so much, and I cannot wait for you to have a great time listening to part two of Tina Landon right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Last week on the show, I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with award-winning choreographer Tina Landon. Now, the funny thing was, we were only supposed to speak for a few minutes, but we ended up getting into a really good conversation about her career, and things just kept going. That's why you get to hear part two of my chat with Tina, which has just been so awesome to have her on the show. So as we pick up the second part of the interview, I was speaking to her about wardrobe and what it was like being on stage with Janet for the tours and sort of needing to go through alterations before actually hitting the stage, seeing if the costumes actually fit. And so I asked Tina what that's like. Do you have to do lots of alterations on the wardrobe before hitting the stage?
Oh, absolutely. We always have one, maybe 2 weeks prior to the show starting of just dress rehearsal, and especially with the Janet act, because the dancers are so involved. It's not just her with, you know, backup dancers that are all in black that you never see. I mean, she makes them such a big part of the show that everyone has custom-made costumes, and so there's a lot of stuff that goes wrong when you're not only dancing in them, but then when you have to go run around in the dark backstage, and then you have 2 minutes to change, if you're lucky. I mean, 2 minutes to change an outfit is a very, very long time for a Janet show. So we had to figure out, okay, you know, you have the, let's first see, does this fit? Does it look good? And, you know, one time, I remember we had these outfits. I don't know whose idea it was, but it was great on paper and not in person. I think for Throb, they had us in these metallic Skittles, like we just kept calling them Skittles after a while. They were like these really, really tight kind of punk pants that were patent leather, metallic Skittles colors.
Wow.
And we all came out on stage and just laughed. We're like, this does not make us feel like dancing Throb right now. It translated well. So, and then that's when you go, okay, great. What are we going to wear now? And we, you know, you X that costume. Or with the zoot suits, you come out, you know, people's zoot suits were too big and they're falling off the shoulders. And there's a lot of time put into really good costuming and really good rehearsals with those costumes to pull off a show, especially like the Velvet Rope. Like when we came out, what we call underdressed, we had to underdress, I think, 3 songs so that when we started with one, we were in, you know, that whole full-on three-piece outfit with a top hat. So we had to get rid of the top hat, the cane, and then we did If, and then we had to get rid of our jackets, and then we did the next song, and we had to just keep on peeling until we were down to the unitard for you. So for those first 5 songs, we're like, oh my God, it's so hot. We have like 5 costumes on underneath each other.
Wow, I would have never known. I figured you guys did have a couple layers on, but I would have never known it was that many.
Yeah. And that's the only, you're kind of going, okay, and you only know that through trial and error.
Wow.
Like, we got 30 seconds, so.
Yeah, because actually it's funny because I had a conversation with a friend of mine about, you know, going to Janet concerts, because I was able to go, obviously, to the Janet tour and then the Velvet Rope. And I remember, I think, timing you guys once. I'm like, because I'm like, it just seems like they're not even off the stage long. And then I think it was like, you know, 45 seconds, 60, you know, 70 seconds you guys were off and then back on. I'm like, that's some serious changing going on back there. So that's.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
And then you learn tricks, you know, the tricks that. I've also had to teach artists that, because these are tricks that you learn as a dancer doing dance recitals, whether they're at the fair or not.
Okay.
You learn that the lights go out and you don't wait till you're off stage. Lights go out, you start ripping things off as you're running back. So it's like you're ripping off a tie, you're pulling off your jacket. So by the time you walk into the dressing room, you're throwing clothes on the floor and you're reaching for the new one. So that's, I mean, there is a serious rehearsal process just for clothing.
Wow, that's insane. And and when you guys, another thing that came up into my mind is, you know, there's all these things that you're dealing with wardrobe and stuff. But what happens, Tina, when like someone gets sick? Like, I feel like, you know, you guys are out on the road for so long. I know I think the Janet tour, you guys were out for like, was it 18 months or something? Like, obviously one night someone's not there. How does that work for you as a choreographer to restage that or deal with that?
It really just depends. A lot of times if it happens prior to the show, during the show. Sometimes, especially when you've been working with the same people, you know, like Seanette and Kelly and Nikki, it's, you just kind of all, it's almost like you can think for each other, and it's like, okay, so-and-so's out of this number, you kind of have to adjust on stage, and you do it in looking at each other and moving yourself over. Sometimes, if we know the day before, like if somebody got hurt, then we just come to rehearsal earlier that day, a sound check. And I basically have to restage the entire show.
Wow.
With the Velvet Rope, yeah. With the Velvet Rope, in fact, there's a funny story. I'll just make it really, really quick. But I went flying across the stage one time. I'll never forget, we were in Utah, and this was for the Janet tour. I think Seanette had gotten sick or had gotten hurt, and we didn't have a lot of time to restage everything. And so we're in Rhythm Nation, and I'm trying to look at Nikki and give her the eyes, you know, the looking at her and looking where and telling her where she needs to go with just my eyes as we're doing the little Rhythm Nation march. And I marched and tripped over my own feet and literally like a, propeller. My arms were just flying. And I landed in my spot. I mean, I actually touched the ground, landed in my spot to come up for the salute or the Rhythm
right.
Nation chant thing.
Yeah.
The military thing, yeah, came up right in time for that. And meanwhile, the rest of us are like, everyone's jerking and laughing and tears are coming down their face because they just saw me fly completely across the stage. So, yeah, so it can be really dangerous when you have to restage a number because somebody's sick or hurt.
Wow, because I've always wondered that. Like, I didn't know if you guys, because didn't you carried an extra dancer, Teresa, right, on the Velvet Rope tour as a swing? Was that the whole way through that you guys did that?
Yes, we did do that.
Okay, perfect. Because I just wondered.
And that was for that purpose. It was like, you know, and she ended up learning both, because financially sometimes you can't bring two swings. It would have been ideal to have a guy swing and a girl swing.
Okay.
But we didn't have that in the budget, so Teresa had to learn all the parts for boys and girls.
Okay. And, you know, you as you're speaking and you're talking about the specific dancers like Seanette and Kelly and Nikki, and even like the guys that you've worked with like Gil and you know, Tice and all that, especially on that Velvet Rope tour, and I guess especially with the girls, like for all of us who are fans of you and Janet and just that vibe, because you mentioned as well before that Janet really sort of, I think she's one of the first artists, it seems at least to me, that pushed the dancers forward to want them to get recognition. It seemed like mm-hmm. it was such a very special group that you had carrying over from the Janet project to the Velvet Rope project. And it felt like you guys were just such a special unit. Does that sort of hold a special place in your heart as well? Like knowing that your fans realize like what a special thing they were watching?
Yeah, it is, because I think, you know, it's kind of like when you're watching anything that touches you, sometimes you don't know why. You just know that there's something special about it. You know, obviously with Janet fans, they knew the background. They knew from one tour to the next, they knew what our relationships were like. And, you know, at that, by the Velvet Rope, me, Kelly, and Nikki were all living together because I had bought my first house and I was freaked out. I'm like, I need roommates. And, you know, Nikki was still young and she's like, I need to move out from home. It's my time. And Kelly was from Canada. She needed a place. So So not only were we working together, we were living together. Shaunette and I were best friends. And then it just kind of, so on one hand, it was, you know, tours and people in show business use the word family all the time. They use it very loosely, but we really were a family. I mean, we really actually lived together off the road as well as on the road. And I think that people, you could just feel it. Like, we were up there, and even when we were mad, we still had each other's backs. You know, we would fight like sisters sometimes. And I remember one time when none of the girls were speaking to each other, but we all have to help each other dress because of the time constraints. And you walk in the dressing room and think, okay, is this person going to be a jerk? And you're like, nope, they're not talking to me, but they're still unzipping me. And that's just, you know, that's the family.
Wow, that's awesome to know. And maybe that's what it was, because it just felt like, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have good seats, you know, especially on those Velvet Rope tours. And it just felt like there was this whole thing emanating from the stage. And maybe that's what it was, that you guys just, you know, obviously it was a genuine feeling that us fans were feeling for you guys up on stage, and that it was a family. So that's awesome to know. And I guess something too, like, you know, for all of us who are fans of dance, and it felt like, especially for you, like Tina Landon, it felt like you broke so much new ground in the 90s with your moves for Janet, you know, like the choreography for If and Together Again and I Get Lonely. And, you know, the list just sort of goes on and on. And it feels like you set the bar really high for other artists and choreographers to try and match your work. If you look back at that, do you feel like you accomplished something very special in the 90s? Like, just because it just seemed like you changed things and the way things were done.
Wow.
Sorry if that was a big, long lead up to that, but.
No. It's so flattering. And thank you for saying that. I don't, you know, I get complimented a lot from fans, and I love hearing that. I guess I just don't look at my work like that.
Okay.
It's just something that I do, and it's something that I get inspired by the music. Obviously my inspiration comes from God, you know, the first and foremost, but I don't know how to answer that, because I guess I just don't look at it like that. And if people see it that way, then it's really, really cool. And it makes me feel amazing. And I'm like, wow, it's just kind of like, I'm in it. This was a job I had to do. This is what I love to do. And this is what I'm giving as a gift. And it just sounds like it's been accepted way bigger than I ever imagined or still think that it had an effect on people.
Well, I think it still does, because I know, like, from just, you know, fellow fans that I speak to, I think all of us wish you were still with Janet, like choreograph, like being with her full time. And so mm-hmm. I think, like, you definitely left a mark just in that generation that continues. Like, anybody that was a Janet fan in the 90s knows you and knows what you did with her. And it was like, you guys were like, you know, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, you know? So I think it's,
wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
There you go. So I just think that's fantastic that, and I think I understand in the way that you said that you don't really know how to answer that question, because I've heard before from other artists, whether they're singers or comedians or whatnot, that they don't even want to sort of, you know, they can't listen back to their work or the same thing, because it's just what they do, and they don't. And even myself being on the radio, like I'm fortunate enough to have certain listeners that come up and tell me that, like, I make their day, and it's such a flattering thing to hear. But you just think you're being yourself, so you know,
right.
So I think I understand that. So I think that's just a wonderful thing that you appreciate, though, like that your fans still love you to this day for the work that you did back then. And even now, like, you know, the work continues. And I've always wanted to ask you how you, I guess, categorize yourself as a choreographer, because I don't even know, like, is there a way that you can sort of describe yourself, or do you just sort of feel like you touch upon so many elements of dance that there's not one thing you can sort of describe yourself as?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot, like, you know, how would you describe your choreography, or what kind do you do? And it's really kind of just been a fusion of every type of movement that's inspired me, you know? So whether it's, I just see myself, if I had to label it or give it a couple of adjectives, I've always said that my work is both athletic and sensual. I've always loved to do, I love the athleticism of it and being able to do the stuff that the boys do. And, you know, they get to jump and they get to kick and they get to roll around on the ground and they get to be really hard and tough. And then, but, you know, for the guys, they don't also get to be really sexy and cutesy and girly. And so there's that side of me as well that wants to be sensual and sexy and girly. And I just think that I, just by nature of what I love to do and how I like to move my body, that those both of those things meld together. And that's kind of what my choreography is based on and kind of comes from.
Okay.
Are those two elements.
And, you know, you've worked with so many artists over the years. Do you enjoy the challenge of meeting them and figuring out what their strengths are? Because I'm assuming, you know, it's different for you to work with a Janet or a Ricky Martin versus like a Rihanna. Like, it just seems like it's different, and it must be challenging to figure out what that artist is about.
It is challenging. And, you know, when you're lucky enough to work with the same artist over time, then you really get to see what works for them and what doesn't work for them and how much time they need. And, you know, and that's a perfect example. I mean, Rihanna and Janet are worlds apart when they're on stage. Rihanna can dance. That's not what she wants to do. That's not what she kind of picks and chooses when she wants to, like, you know, really be full on dancing and when she just wants to be vibing. So luckily I've been working with her long enough. And, you know, I was able to get her to dance quite a bit in Umbrella and in the first part of the tour. And then she just, you know, her music changed, her vibe changed, and she wanted a different look and a different thing. And you start to, and, you know, her schedule was so bananas with any new upcoming artist that kind of blows up overnight, which is what happened with us during Umbrella. I mean, everything changed once she got that Grammy nomination, that we were just flying by the seat of our pants. And so half of the time with her, now we've got it down to a science where it's like, okay, when am I going to see her? Am I actually going to see her in rehearsal or the day of the show? And sometimes I don't see her until the day of the show because she's doing another show someplace else or a photo shoot or recording a new song. So it's not like she doesn't want to be there. She physically can't. So I've got to learn, okay, well, then I've got to get all the dancers ready. I've got to get this all lined up. I have to figure exactly what she's doing. So when she walks on stage, I go, you hit this point, that point, this point. You bend over here, you smile, and you're done.
Wow.
And sometimes that's literally all the time I get with her. And then there's times like when we did the basketball thing here, the All-Star.
Oh, yeah.
She, you know, she was in rehearsal. We actually got, I think, 4 days with her.
Wow.
And but again, we were doing 5 other shows at the same time. We were doing the Grammys, we were doing the Brits, we were doing the tour, and we were doing one other thing that I can't remember. But the Brits were in London, by the way. So it was a lot. And you know, it's just so much different now than when. I mean, I cherish the moments that Janet and I had, and the time that she puts into rehearsal, and the care that goes in with the wardrobe and the way that she cares about what the dancers are wearing. And yes, it's a lot more money and it's a lot more expensive, but she has been kind of the guru and the one who's somebody you want to follow and lay out the pattern for how a tour should run and be successful. And it can all work if you just plan it out right.
And
so I loved working on all those tours and being able to see, you know, what comes when you have tons of rehearsal time and good effort put behind it.
And it feels like in your description of the two projects or the two different ways things are being done, it feels like you as a choreographer had to completely sort of shift how you do things because it's like this fast food society. Like, I don't, you know, I'm sure Rihanna would like to maybe be in rehearsals for 2 weeks, but because there's so much going on, she can't be. So has that been like an extra stress on you to sort of, I guess, speed everything up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's much tougher. And that's a perfect description that you said was it's like fast food, you know, artists these days. And it's not even the artist, but it's the fast food schedule that they have. And it's really hard on us choreographers and, you know, artistic directors trying to figure out. And again, because of this multimedia, YouTube and whatnot, you can't do what we did. I mean, I remember that's where a lot of it has changed. I remember when we did, I think it was when we were doing Got Till It's Gone, we did Got Till It's Gone on the same performance on every single show in Europe, because they're all different markets. We did the same thing on Oprah. We did the same thing. And that, you know, that was part of what the fans love. But nowadays, it's different. And unfortunately, I think with Janet, she'll always have those types of fans that don't mind seeing the same performance once or twice, but you can't do it five or six times like we used to. You have to literally do a different performance for every single show these artists are doing, and some of them are doing four or five of them a month, you know, and some of them are doing them back to back. Like Brianna's got, I think, X Factor here in LA, and 3 days later she's going to do it in London, but it can't be the same thing because somebody's going to put it on YouTube.
Wow.
So it's really challenging, sometimes very frustrating, but it's one of those that at the end of the day, when you finally pull it off and all your hard work, you know, you get to see it and it actually works, you kind of go, oh my God, okay, it's worth it.
Wow.
But it's tough. It's a different ball game these days, for sure.
And what's your schedule like, Tina? Because it just sounds like with all these different things going on, especially when you are working with someone like Rihanna, you must be all over the place too, I would imagine.
I was for about the last 5 years with her. It was nonstop. And she was on tour, I think, we haven't worked together for a while because once she was down out on tour, I'd done some television stuff with her and then we were done and I jumped right back into my acting because that's what I'm doing now, and spending every moment that I'm not dancing is in acting classes and auditioning. And so yeah, my schedule was beyond insane. Like I was actually, just because I've had a little bit of time off, that I've been reflecting on how crazy it had gotten. And like I said, there were times that I would literally, there was a time that I had, I think, three different groups of dancers going at the same time. And the only other time this has ever happened was with Ricky Martin when he first started, and they were promoting him everywhere at the same time, that I had to have a group of dancers in Italy, a group of dancers on the East Coast, and a group of dancers on the West Coast, because he would just fly in for the performance. But as any dancer knows, you know, the artist can do that, the dancers can't. You have to have at least a week of rehearsal or a few days. So that's what was happening with Rihanna. It was literally getting to a point where, okay, she might be able to jump on a flight and be at the next place, but all these dancers can't, and it's too expensive. So there was a time where she was doing every X Factor in Europe. So we had dancers from London, dancers from Madrid, dancers from Italy. I had dancers back in L.A. and then dancers for the tour. So I would either go ahead and get them started and then my assistant would take over. But it was absolutely bananas. I think I was in the air traveling more than I was home in the last 2 years.
Wow. And has that sort of pace made you want to make a shift like to other things, like to the acting? Or is that something you've always wanted to do anyway?
No, it's something I've always wanted to do, but you know, once I started working with Rihanna, I'd been wanting to do it for the last 5 years, and I have been in class while I've been doing this as well.
Okay.
So it just became one of those things that I thought, gosh, you know, something's got to give at some point. And I still love choreographing, but if I continue that crazy schedule, there's no way I'll ever be able to fulfill my other need, which is acting and being a performer and still being on stage.
Okay.
So that's why now things have dialed back, and I have actually had the time to now put myself first, that now everything else is coming second.
That's awesome. And then so with the acting, where are you trying to head with that? Like television, film, does it matter? Like stage?
All of the above. Right now I'll take anything. I'm just doing little things here and there. I've actually just kind of fallen in love with improv. I think I'm in love with the thrill and the, like, how much it scares the crap out of me. Because it really is. I was taking a class that was improv for actors, which is a different thing. Now I'm studying improv, which is more like that. I don't know if you guys got that show in Canada. Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like you're just thrown out there to the wolves and you have to create on the spot. And for somebody who came from a dance studio, wasn't even comfortable freestyling, that's also like equal to freestyling for a dancer who's not used to that. It's like, what? Just go? So with acting, I've been doing theater and Shakespeare and all that stuff for the last 8 years, but now doing improv is a whole new thing. And it's, like I said, it's just like freestyling for me, so it's a little scary,
and,
but exciting.
And are you still doing a lot of teaching as well, Tina, like dancing and choreography?
I teach every once in a while. I don't make that a big part of my life only because it is something that I care a lot about, so it exhausts me to no end. So I try and just do master classes from here. I'm actually teaching this weekend in Calgary.
Oh, great. Oh, for Triple Threat?
Yeah.
There you go. That's awesome. Good for you. I'm glad you're still doing that because Kelly, obviously, one of your dancers from the Janet days, so that's fantastic. And I have to ask you, just speaking of, because I would be, I think, remiss to a lot of your fans if I didn't ask you this. You know, just over 2 years ago, you know, you came together with all these other wonderful choreographers like Tice, you know, Chris Judd, Wade Robson, Lorianne Gibson, Lady Gaga's choreographer, to dance with Janet yet again at the MTV Video Music Awards to honor Michael. So I have to ask you, what was it like to be dancing and in rehearsal with Janet again, and also to then get on stage and honor Michael, because I think everyone in the world was watching that performance.
Yeah, that was so, I don't even have the words to describe it, because it was, for so many things going on. It wasn't just for Michael. I know for the fans, it was that having Janet and I together again, and that whole, you know, just that whole thing was, it was one of those things that you're like, yes, this is so cool. Oh, it's so sad because it's for Michael, but it's so cool. And then being a dancer, being a fan of his, feeling like you get to be a part of something that he was at the forefront. He was one of the creators. He was the one who kind of gave this gift to all of us, you know, through music videos. It kind of came full circle that we were all kind of giving it back, kind of like, okay, teacher, this is for you. This is what you have given us. We want to honor you with it. Being back with Janet again was, it was like no time had gone by. And even in our dancing together, it was just weird that it just felt so natural. It felt like we were just back in rehearsal for the tour, and we were going to go on the road. Like, that's exactly what it felt like, with the jokes and the laughing and the sweat and the pain and everything else. It was a really, really, I feel really honored to have been a part of that whole experience.
And what was it like, I guess, just because I, you know, I remember, you know, I moved some of the things that I had in my schedule to make sure that I was, you know, sitting in front of the television watching it as it happened. And I just remember thinking, like, what is it like for all of you guys, you know, the 60 seconds before you hit the stage? Like, what was going on in your mind, Tina?
Oh, my God. Don't fall. That's pretty much what was going on in my mind, because, you know, that whole section from Scream was never meant to come after 2 hours of 2 minutes of power dancing. Like, so when they did that in the video, it was hard enough to get up off the ground. But when you're doing it after Dale's choreography for 2 minutes, it's like we're dying by the time it came to the breakdown. Like, wow. Literally dying. And then, of course, you have shoes that are slick. You have all this stuff going on. But I think the craziest thing was we were down below while the other dancers were doing the Thriller section. And we were on this, it was like this huge elevator that was the length of the stage. And that brought up the entire set that we were on. So we're down below, and we can kind of hear stuff. You know, you can't really hear because of the acoustics. And as we get into place and people can see us, the screaming was beyond loud. We could not hear the music. So now we have a different fear. Like, oh my God, we're not going to hear the music. What's going on? We can't hear. And then the other side of you is like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing to be a part of. Listen to those screams. Nobody screams in LA. There's all celebrities and entertainers out there who don't get off their butts for anybody, and they are screaming like fans at a concert. So there was a lot going on 20, 30, 60 seconds prior to that performance.
Okay.
A lot going on emotionally.
And you, for you as well, I feel like there's an added element in the fact that, you know, this is Scream. You and Sean Cheeseman worked on this back in 95 together with Janet and Michael. So what did that feel like, that element of it?
Again, it was surreal. It was like an out-of-body experience. It was almost as if I was watching it happen while it was happening.
Wow.
You know, you're thrown together by all these emotions that you're not just up there as a dancer, you're not just up there as a choreographer. People are looking at this, and the video that you, or the section of this video that you created, people know, they remember. People that aren't dancers, they know it. Like you've gone into so many people's lives, and you've touched so many people just doing what you do and what you love to do every day. So it really was something that was almost non-tangible. Like it was just out there floating. I know that sounds really weird, but that's the best description that I have.
I think that's totally fair, and I think it's moving for so many of dance fans and your fans and Michael and Janet's fans to hear that. And I guess the other thing too, it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask you, you know, especially now that he's gone, what was it like to work with him in 95, Tina, when you were doing Scream? Because, you know, so many people miss him to this day, and you know, it's only been 2.5 years, or just about 2.5 years, and it's such a loss, you know, for the music community, the dance community, the entertainment community. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine what it was like to work with him.
It was, you know, it was definitely an honor. It was crazy in the sense that, you know, I think some people look at Michael and Janet just as brother and sister. Then they look at Michael and Janet not as brother and sister, but just two separate huge entertainers. So there's all of that. So they are brother and sister. That doesn't mean they may look alike. They may have some vibes together, but they dance totally different. Their approach to choreography is completely different. And their schedules at the time were completely opposite. So there was a lot of challenges with that video. I think the biggest challenge was having to fight for that piece of choreography.
Really?
Because the director did not want to do that. Yes. He thought he was going to be the guy that came in and said, and when he was the guy that came in and said, oh, you know, everyone's expecting it, so I don't want to do it. And our mouths, I remember it was me, Janet, Renee, our mouths hit the floor. We're like, what? Well, what? And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's going to expect. Yeah, that's what their fans expect. That's what they want. That's what we're doing. And literally, it was the last thing we shot. And there was a lot of pressure because Michael was on a time crunch. He had to leave town, or he was going, he had something in his schedule. He had to leave. And we were like on day 11 of the shoot, and they had not even built the room. They didn't even know where this room was going to be. In the spaceship. They didn't have it built. It was just like they were going to do everything they could to not put this number in the video. So that was a whole other element that hardly anybody knows about. So that was probably the biggest challenge.
And and I heard it too, and I guess this is a good time for you to dispel that rumor or say that it's true or not, but I'd heard that there was a problem with the dance floor, that it was really slick or something, and there was a problem with you guys having to refix that, or like you having to re-choreograph some moves to help them out?
Well, there was a couple things happening. I did re-choreograph some moves the day before because they just weren't working for the two of them. Like there was a section that kind of looked good on Janet but not on Michael, and then vice versa. So I think this, everything works good except for this one section. So that was one thing I did fix, which freaked Michael out because it was the day before the shoot. But I'm like, trust me, like you'll get this. I promise. Like it's going to feel in your body better. It's going to look better. The both of you together will look better. So he did trust me with that. But when we got to the set, again, what I said earlier about the fact that they both approach choreography and dance differently, Michael loves a slick floor. Janet does not. So it was like, okay, well, we're both dancing on the same floor. How do we make half of it slippery and half of it not slippery? And then they're doing that, you know, they start out with that knee slide. They're mm-hmm. both wearing patent leather. I'm like, okay, so if we put powder, which we had to do for them to get the slide, then once you stand up, you're dancing in powder, which is really slick and it's hard to stand on. So it was just, I think it was just kind of a hit and miss. It was like, okay, well, we'll do a little bit of powder, and then when you get up, you got to get in front of it so you don't slip, or Michael can stay where he is and dance on top of it since he likes a slick floor. So it was a lot of figuring out on the spot with everyone looking at their watches because Michael had to get out of there. So it was crazy.
Wow. And a question too I would have, because you just mentioned that they both have different approaches to choreography and stuff. Is their approach to, I guess, rehearsal time and stuff different too? Like, is it just like he does it, you know, way A and she does it way B, and you were trying to meld everything together?
I actually worked with them separately before I worked with them together. And the difference in their approach, I mean, they both approach the performance and the rehearsal the same as far as allowing enough time, making sure they're rehearsed, making sure everything is ready to go. Like they both approach it that way. But as far as the actual steps, the actual choreography, Janet approaches it just kind of as a dancer. Like you show her and she follows behind right away. Like, okay, this is like one and two. She's like, okay, one and two. And that's how she learns. Michael studies. So you have to dance for him over and over and over. Can I see it again? Can I see it again? Can I see it again? And then he gets up and does it.
Wow.
So it's like he doesn't learn it like little piece by little piece. He just watches it, kind of memorizes it, and then he gets up and does it. I'm like, whoa, never saw anyone do that before. That was really interesting.
Wow, that's insane. I think that's great. And I think so many of his fans will love to hear just the, and just, I think all of your fans just love to hear how it must have been for you to have to, you know, come up with moves and do this for the Jacksons, like Michael and Janet. So that is just something so great on your list of things that you've done, Tina. That's fantastic. And I guess too, you know, you've worked with so many artists, as I mentioned off the top, Rihanna, Ricky Martin, Shakira, Jennifer Lopez. You know, you busted her out of the gate, you know, back in 2000, 2001 or 99, sorry. Like, what is it when you look back on all these music videos you've done, all the tours you've done? I know you can't sort of say, you know, who's your favorite or whatever, but are there specific videos that sort of stick out in your mind that you're like, yeah, we did that?
Yeah, definitely. I think If Definitely is one of my favorite videos that I'm very proud of. And definitely La Vida Loca, I think, are the two. There's another one that I really love a lot, which was Christina Aguilera's Come On Over.
Right.
Because that was a fun, I got to work with the director on that, Paul Hunter, where it was the first time that it was about the dancers kind of being still and the set moving behind them. So it was staging dancers and set pieces, which was fun. And La Vida Loca was just crazy. And that video captured everything about working with Ricky and the fast pace and the craziness and the sexuality and the fun. And I was really happy with the direction of it, because usually I'm not. Usually they take the choreography, and if you're not working with Janet or Michael, then you're working with anyone else. They want to cut up the choreography and put it wherever it goes in the song. So very happy with that video, and obviously very, very excited and still very proud of it.
And I think that, Tina, you have so many fans now that are, you know, like if you look at sports, you know, there's people that are fans of Peyton Manning and they want to be him, or they want to be Michael Jordan, or they want to be, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant. I think that there's such a legion of young dancers out there that want to be the next Tina Landon, or to at least follow in your footsteps. What do you say to these young dancers that are out there? What tips does Tina Landon tell these youngsters to sort of get where you've gotten?
I would say, first and foremost, is to get the training, get the experience, get the knowledge of all these different styles of dance, of anything that involves movement. So whether it's gymnastics, whether it's nunchucks, whether it's martial arts, you know, it's like, don't just have one thing that you're great at. And even if you don't like to take all these other things, just take it, because you'll never know what you can pull from that. If I only had one style of dance in my hip pocket, I don't think that I would have the career that I have. I don't think that I would be able to work with the different artists that I have worked with in the past. And I think another thing is, I know that when you're, you know, in your teens and your early 20s, you're so anxious and you think the world's passing you by and you're not getting your chance. But to look at every thing that you do, whether you're paid or not paid, as what can I get from this experience? Even if I hate it, what can I learn from this to make sure it doesn't happen again? Or what's good in this? What's bad in this? What? Just take everything that you do as an learning experience, and just think that you have a tool belt, and that everything that you're learning, you're putting in that tool belt because when the time comes, you'll never know which one you're going to have to pull out at what moment. So the best advice I could get is just to, you know, put your head down, get busy working, and something will come.
And do we expect to see Tina Landon as like a judge on like So You Think You Can Dance? Because I really want you to do it, Tina. I really want to see you. I really want like to see you up. Like, I know you've done some guest judging for certain things, but like, can we ever expect to see you on like a Dancing with the Stars or a So You Think You Can Dance? Because I think people would just pass out if you actually did that.
You know what? I think a lot of these shows are really great because of what they do for dance, and they really get people to understand and give them more knowledge. Like, you know, your vocal plumber at home with that dancing was so easy, and they're seeing how hard it is. I love that aspect of the show. I would rather be a mentor than a judge. Okay. I don't like the format of these shows and the way that they tear these poor dancers apart. I would rather be somebody who uplifts, somebody who critiques with love to get that person better, as opposed to just saying something for shock value.
Okay. And I feel too.
So that's why.
That's why.
That's the only thing I have with those shows.
Okay. So you'd be like, yeah, you'd like to come on as like a mentor and sort of do a section and stuff. And something that I wanted to ask you as well, because, and just speaking of So You Think You Can Dance, and I guess I'm assuming this, but I feel like the person that I've seen you to be like on stage and just, you know, in interactions that I've seen, you know, on the internet or whatever, it feels like you must be so proud of the dancers who you have brought up who are now doing really well. For example, like a Gil, who's still with Janet, or Tice DiOrio, who's on So You Think You Can Dance. Like, what does it feel like to see these dancers who you helped to sort of get to another point? Like, what do you feel when you look back at these young kids and where they're at now?
Oh, it's so exciting. I mean, on one hand, I kind of feel like a mother hen. Like, oh, look at, you know, but at the same time, it's what I saw in them when I hired them. So it doesn't really surprise me, but it makes me happy that they're expanding and that they're doing such good work and that they're happy doing it, because you can tell that they are. So that's kind of like the payback for me.
And where can we expect to see Tina Landon next? Like, what is on the horizon for you? I know more acting and stuff. Like, what do you want to see happen for you in the next 12 to 18 months?
Oh, God, a blockbuster film. That's what I want to be in. No, I just, I don't know. You know, I never know where my life's going to take me. I never planned to work with Rihanna for 5 years or Janet for 8 years or however long we worked together. So I never know. I just keep myself open and I just keep working. I'm taking my classes. I'm teaching my conventions. I just kind of keep busy and leave it up to God. So if he's listening, I'm hoping that you will be seeing me either in your living room on television or at the movies very soon.
And last question I have to ask you, because again, you have such an impressive resume. What's the best part about being Tina Landon? I'm making you sweat a little, Tina. I'm sorry.
What's the best part of being Tina Landon? I don't know. I mean, I guess. What's the best part of being Tina Landon? I had just being blessed with being able to do what I love and having the people I love around me. I know it sounds really mushy and, you know, kissy-kissy, but it wouldn't mean anything if I didn't love what I was doing, and it wouldn't mean anything if I didn't love the people that I was working with. So I guess that's the best part about being me, is that I love what I do, and I love that I get a chance to do it.
Awesome. Tina, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Kelly. It's my pleasure.
That's award-winning choreographer Tina Landon. Again, make sure to check her out. She's going to be on screen nearby very soon. That's Rihanna with We Found Love, the Cahill Radio Edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a huge and massive thank you going out to my one and only guest this week, Tina Landon. As I mentioned earlier, it was a complete dream come true to have Tina on the show. So thank you, Tina, for joining us this week. I really appreciate it. If you have any comments or questions about the interview or anything else, very simple. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and on Twitter at Kelly Alexander. Have a wonderful week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Pare, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.